This episode of Butcher's Breakaway is brought to you by you, the fans. Couldn't be here without you. Couldn't be here without Capo Caco. Couldn't be here without Lafreniere. Couldn't be here without Adam Fox. And if you want to support us, you can go to patreon.com/Butcher's Breakaway where you can get our BSB OTs. We'll be doing one this week. I think Wednesday or Thursday it'll drop this week. Very fun. Our Discord is always bumping. Our Insider's Chat, a very good time. A lot of great things. Anyway, thanks for the support. Good show today. We have Katie Bakes from The Ringer on. We talk about Henrik Lundqvist. We talk about sports radio. And, of course, Greg and I break down the two games of, like, just two tales of two cities with CBJ and versus the Devils. And, I mean, the shootout, everything about it. And Greg talks about Taylor Swift in about a second, and it confuses the hell out of me. And in other news, let's get to the show.
Hi, everybody. It's Mark Messier, and you're listening to Blue Shirts Breakaway, the number one Rangers podcast.
Bushwick Breakaway fans, welcome to the week of the Bushwick Breakaway. I am your host, Ryan Mead. You can sponsor this podcast at patreon.com/Bushwick Breakaway, and I'm here with my co-host, Greg Kaplan, also a Bushwick Breakaway Patreon. And guess what? Guess what? The kids are here, Greg. Greg, say hello.
Now, Ryan.
Yes.
This is going to be an upbeat, yep. I think, podcast.
I got an email a couple weeks ago that was like, for being the number one New York Rangers podcast, you're the most negative anti-team podcast ever. And I was like, are we? I don't think so. Have you listened to the other ones?
Yeah. Anyway, sad sack of shit. So I'm going to get this out of my system right now. I have a gripe.
Okay.
I need to share a gripe.
Starting negative? Okay.
No. It's not really about the New York Rangers. It's fair.
It's about
but
the
I have
Mets.
A gripe I want to share and I want on record.
Okay.
You may have heard last week, Taylor Swift re-released an album.
Yeah, Red, a 10-minute Taylor version. I'm not a Taylor fan. I'm sure the Taylor
hype. First of all, no. All Too Well is one song encapsulated in one album, but it's the song everybody's talking about. And I'm happy you brought that up. It's a song I want to talk about.
Okay.
Here's my thing, Ryan.
Yeah.
I saw a lot of dudes, mostly dudes, some confused women, but mostly dudes.
Yes.
Talk about how it's not normal for a person to talk about a breakup that happened 10, 11 years ago today. That's not normal. That's quote unquote psychotic behavior.
Yep.
Here's my thing. Are these the same dudes that are starting Potvin suck chants booing Alec Martinez telling me Carlos Beltran should have swung at a curveball? Like, fuck you. You have issues, man. You have breakups. They're not actual breakups. They're just sporting events. And it's the same thing. We're all going through the same shit. We're all trying to exist on this higher level of plane that we're all trying to get to. If we're talking about shit from 10 years ago, let them talk about shit from 10 years ago. Who cares?
I can't believe this is the open. This is unbelievable.
It's been bothering me. I went on this rant. During the rain, I was at the Ranger game on Sunday. Breaking news.
Right.
Went
Congratulations,
with our friend
by
Jeff.
The way.
Thank you. Went with our friend Jeff, big Devils fan, so it was even better for me.
Yeah, I knew that you were there with him. It felt really good for me.
But I did this rant to him loudly enough so other people in the section could hear me, because I take Ranger games as an opportunity to test out some material every now and then.
I think you should. One time a lady turned her phone towards me and our friend, or rather part of the podcast, Drew Way, and it said, please be quiet. She didn't look at us. She just turned her phone with a message that said, please be quiet. I was like, where do you think we are? It's like unbelievable.
There were people sitting behind me. There are two dudes in front of me from Ireland, first Ranger game they've ever been to. And
I'm sure they're
they
going
were
nuts.
Just reacting to things like soccer fans would. So they were standing up at weird times.
Yep.
And the people behind me were just like, sit the fuck down.
What?
And at one point, I turned to them and I didn't turn to the people that said, sit the fuck down. I turned to the Irish people sitting in front of me and said very loudly, I was like, don't worry about them. They too have legs. They can stand up. And that's all I said. Because, Brian,
it's a sports event.
It's a sporting event. Stand the fuck up.
Yeah.
Like, oh my God, I can't see for 2 seconds.
Okay, we need to be happy.
You're right.
It has to happen because people are going to yell at us.
You know what made me really happy?
Tell me.
Kind of. I'm actually still a little angry about this too.
So you were at the game though? Because, you
know, I was at the game. DraftKings, DraftKings had a line for over-under shots on goal for Artemi Panarin after Saturday going into Sunday. What do you think the line was? Shots on goal, not goals, not points, just shots on goal.
Shots on goal, 6?
See, you're thinking logically.
I'm sorry.
It was 2.5.
Wow. That low?
I'm upset I didn't put $10,000 on the over.
They hit two and a half shots on goal for a 10-meter.
Two and a half was minus – the over was minus 104.
Dude, the goalway story from the game on Saturday against Columbus Blue Jackets.
He took 11 shots and six of them were on net. Yes, I know.
He said that one's for coach, and then he asked Vince about his shampoo.
Yes. Two and a half, Ryan. I should have – who needs a job if I put all my life savings on that?
Yeah.
And yet I didn't.
The easiest bet of all time. I'm upset that we didn't have – that was a lock. Oof.
Well, I mean, I'm not going to lie. I made a little money, but I should have made all the money, and that's what I'm upset about.
Right, yeah. I have all those stories too. So last time on the podcast, you and I did you did a quintessential what grinds my gears this week, Gregory, rant. One of your better ones in a long time.
The one today or last week?
Last week. Not today. Definitely not today.
I thought the one today was pretty good.
I'm not going to rank that in the top 10, for sure. Okay. But last week.
Is that because my top 10 is very good?
No. Actually, sometimes you have a strong top 5. It's really up there. Like your top 5, yeah. And including the Trubo, like, you know, making that happen, that trade, that's a good one. You have a lot of stuff like that. But
that's not a grinds my gears one.
No, but you've done a lot of good in your life, especially in the Bushwick Breakaway sphere. That is.
All right.
You came up with the billboard. That was good.
Buddy, you're married. Take me out to dinner first.
That's
right?
True. Sorry, my apologies. So the game happens. I don't even know where was I? Oh yeah. So last week you talk about Lafreniere and Kako and what exactly happened with the New York Rangers and drafting them, which is that they had to. It would be stupid not to. And the talent was there, and it was just you had to be patient and you had to wait. Because the Rangers are doing a terrible job developing forwards. I believe it was, I can't imagine. The last 30 years, they'd have an NFL forward they drafted go over 60 points. That's not the exact stat, but it's something like that. And then you were repaid, and Ranger fans were repaid with patience against the Devils team, who has, you know, it's not like a walkover. They didn't have Jack Hughes, but they did play very well. But the Rangers, we've lambasted, who are now 9-3-3, came out, and the two best players on the team versus the Devils, I can't believe I can say this, by miles, Kaapo Kakko and Alexi Lafreniere. I don't know how that's possible, how they did it. The shootout, Greg, I hate the shootout. I hate it. I think it's lame. I wish we would do ties. The shootout was, my hands were on my head. I was tense. It was like I was watching a playoff game. How was it in the building?
Man, had Lafreniere won it,
I know.
I think the building would have been the loudest it's been since one of their last playoff runs. Definitely since I probably would have been on par with the Mika 5-goal game.
Yes.
As the only non-playoff eruption that would have equaled it. The building was pretty loud. The Kakko goal, I think souls left bodies, both
yeah,
Ranger
I mean,
fans and the Devils fans that were in attendance. Yeah, I'll be honest. The loudest the building was the entire night, though, was the Subban sucks chant.
Nice.
And moments like that really do. There's a very good reason why we're all chanting that. I know that. And he's a piece of shit. At the same time, when you have 15,000 plus people that all hate the same person equally, it really does just somehow make you feel a little happy.
It's there's something magic about that. That group bonding experience of a guy, and we'll talk about Sammy Blais in a second, who the news has not come out. I know he got an MRI today. I can only assume it'll be weeks, if not months, if not worse, and we're hoping for the best.
Hockey players are fucking weird. That's what I said that to Jeff last night, where like it looked terrible. The replays looked terrible. His leg looks like it disintegrates as it hits the board. Like it reverberates in a way a leg is not supposed to reverberate. At the same time, he could be day-to-day, and I'd be unsurprised.
Like the Igor situation last year, where he had was taken off the ice, carried off by
the
trainers.
The Reeves situation earlier this year.
Yeah, that's true. You're right. So let's be patient with Sammy Blais. We don't know just yet. We'll talk about the lineup changes, but let's finish up the game. So overtime happens. Adam Fox is in his zone for 2-3 minutes. What's going through your mind as you're watching the overtime where Panarin can't get a shift change, the Rangers are stuck in their own zone, Georgiev is in net. We've seen this a million times. I'm afraid that he's going to go down the hallway with somebody. What's going on? Like, the building is tense, right?
You're talking about the Devils' seemingly 2.5-minute possession essentially ended overtime?
Yes.
At no point did I feel threatened. And I don't think anyone in the building felt threatened.
Love that.
I don't think Jeff felt confident sitting next. It was very fascinating to be at that game with a Devil fan because it if you or I were there, I think the emotions would have felt different. But Jeff's telling me the entire game saying, I don't want this game to go to overtime. Our 3-on-3 situation sucks. The best thing we can hope for is to essentially play for the shootout. And even then, that sucks because we don't have anyone to take shootouts. And I'm sitting there at no point during that 3-on-3. Yes, it got frustrating. The Rangers couldn't get the puck. At no point did I feel like the Rangers were in danger of giving up a goal. I had never felt that way on a 3-on-3 situation. It just, they were controlling the puck. They weren't creating opportunities. It was unlike anything I've seen. The only thing I could compare that to is, for soccer fans out there, there are times where teams literally try to just dribble the ball to the corner, sit on the ball, and just maintain possession to kill time off stoppage time. That's what that 3-on-3 felt like. It honestly felt like the Devils wanted to get to the shootout. And I want to talk more about that game, but I do want to push back on something you said earlier.
Hit me.
The point of the Rangers haven't developed a 60-point forward they've drafted since God knows when.
Mm-hmm.
It's a disingenuous comment in my mind. Because are you going to sit here and tell me that Chris Kreider hasn't had an effective, above-expectation career? You're going to tell me Derek Stepan wasn't a good player for the New York Rangers? The 60-point threshold feels a little choosy.
He was a good player.
All I'm saying is, I'm not saying the New York Rangers are better at developing talent than we're giving them credit for. I'm just saying to choose the 60-point threshold, that eliminates the forwards the Rangers have been able to develop. And I just want to push back on that.
That is because, a good point.
Yeah, Stepan outperformed every expectation we ever had for him. And you replay Chris Kreider's career 100 times, I think he underperforms this level of performance at least 40% of the time. Like, a lot of things could have gone wrong for Chris Kreider. And then
everything's going right for him right now. He's the hottest he's ever been.
I know they didn't draft Matt Zuccarello technically, but that's talent they identified and signed. So it's a little choosy. I understand we have high expectations for Kako and Lafreniere. I'm not saying they developed properly. I understand all that. I really hate that narrative in particular, because that's like me saying, well, the Mets haven't been able to develop a 55-plus home run hitter just because Pete Alonso only hit 53.
Yeah, that's a good point. So solid point. There have been some. And also, the Rangers didn't draft a first-round pick for, I don't know, many, many years. So
yeah.
That also plays into it.
It's very choosy to me. We can be critical of how Kako and Lafreniere have developed specifically without saying the Rangers have never been able to do this. Again, it's this word nuance, right? It's crazy. But anyway, hockey games.
Yes. So let's go back to the Blue Jackets game, a game that I walked to the bathroom and the Rangers scored 3 goals in a minute and 3 seconds. It was an explosion. They looked pretty.
In the bathroom? Are you okay?
Yeah, I'm all right. Thank you for asking. I was wondering when someone was going to ask me how it went, but no one did.
Well, anytime you use the word explosion immediately after saying you went to the bathroom, I need to check in.
People told me to stay in there, and it was rough for me. It was hard, Gregory. I'll be honest with you, but I stayed in there for the game because you had to. You know, they scored 3 goals. Igor gets taken out of the game in concussion protocol. Not really, seemingly not really an issue. Just a spotter. Same thing that happened with Blackwood. Last night versus when Kapo runs into him. We asked Tim Peel last week, what is goalie interference? We still don't know. We still don't know.
I honestly feel better and better for even asking now.
You should.
The last couple games have just proven my point. It's amazing. I will say this. Watching the first period of that Blue Jackets game, if you had told me the next 5 periods of Rangers hockey would be some of the best hockey they've played all season, wouldn't have believed it.
There's no way.
That first period against the Blue Jackets was as abysmal as any hockey we've seen this entire year. And it was even more worrisome in my mind because that was the first period of hockey they had played in a week. So they were supposed to be at their freshest. And they came out, and they didn't just lay an egg. They looked as lost as ever. And that at that moment, I was like, man, it ain't working. Whatever it is supposed to be, this isn't it.
And then
Chris Kreider got better, which is good.
Yeah, Chris Kreider and Panarin just absolutely, I don't want to say blow up a bathroom, but they definitely put some in the pot for sure. And from there,
They took the Browns to the Super Bowl.
They did. And then it was really the tale of two games, which is the vets and then the kids. The kids did it all. There's a Slack notification. I'm a dummy. I'm an idiot.
How do you have it open?
I don't know. I always forget because I work all day on it. It's so stupid, and I keep it open, and I record my own audio.
You don't close your browsers at the end of the day.
It's not a browser. It's an app I use on my desktop. It's different. I'm a dummy.
Jesus Christ.
I know. Such an idiot. Yes, so the kids take care of the Devils game pretty much on their own. I know Adam Fox has a backhand move that – how does Adam Fox make everything look so effortless?
Wait, are you suggesting Adam Fox isn't one of the kids?
Yeah, I guess he is one of the kids. I feel like he's a vet.
his extension doesn't kick in until next year. He's literally on his entry-level contract. He is a child.
You're making a good point. I think he's only 2 years older than Kako, but it feels like he's like 35 years old and like a grizzled veteran. But yeah, you're right. He made that backhand, and Steve Valiquette did a great job breaking this down. Like, why, as a defender, would you ever practice the backhand? You're never going to use it. And he does it in such a nonchalant, like, oh yeah, I can do this kind of way, where it's like, oh yeah, Adam Fox. I feel like you have to fire his agent, like, now, because $9.5 million is not enough. He really is that good.
At the same time, his agent should have a lifetime contract because he helped engineer Adam Fox to get to the New York Rangers.
That's true.
Let's be thankful.
Help him achieve
also,
his goal.
While the children, and we need to give the children all the praise, especially Kako, who had just Kako easily could have had 3 points had he been able to hit the weird empty netter. But a little shout out to Sammy Blais pre-injury. In the moment, that goal happened on the opposite ice from where I was sitting. And I reacted to Blais reacting. I had assumed the puck was already in the net at some point in time. Sammy Blais throwing the entire Devils team off their feet by just acting like the puck was already in the net, despite the puck not being in the net yet. I know he doesn't get an assist on the Lafreniere goal, but we should think about changing that.
Yeah, he definitely did, I don't want to say bluff his way through, but it certainly helped. Kako should have shot that one too. It seemed like he had another position, but gave it to Lafreniere, and they got the goal they needed. This Ranger team is in a really interesting position, Greg. They're 9-3-3. They have 21 points. They're a point behind the Capitals. The Hurricanes have 2 games in hand, and they're a point behind them also. The Hurricanes are on a different level this year, despite having 6 other Rangers, former Rangers, that is. And then they're 4 up on the Devils right now. And the Penguins are struggling. The Islanders are struggling. Then the Flyers are definitely struggling. So this division is still hell. You and I have talked every week about how this team needs to figure something out and get things going because they've been crushed at 5-5. Is this the time they turn the corner? The game Saturday versus the Ottawa Senators is canceled due to COVID precautions. They will still play the Canadiens on tonight. And then Thursday is the Maple Leafs. So it should be a little bit of an interesting week. The Maple Leafs will be a test. The Canadiens are struggling right now.
Canadiens are flat out bad. Yes.
They have 11 losses, which I believe is the second highest in the league. I'll double check right now. The Coyotes have 13. My apologies. Should have figured that out.
You said second highest, not highest.
Oh, I did. There we go. So, yeah, I was right. They have 11 losses right now. They seemingly don't have anything going for them whatsoever. Carey Price obviously came out and talked about his addiction problems and how he's going through them. So they're lacking him. Also, their captain retired in Shea Weber. They lost one of their best centers. So the Canadiens have a lot going on, and hopefully the Rangers can perform in a not trap game style in this situation. You have to imagine that Lafreniere and Kako are going to get some more chances, which brings me to my next conversation. Filipedal seemingly is coming back at this point in time from his day-to-day injury. I guess he was IR'd, but we didn't know what the injury was, but it was day-to-day, and he's skating on his own. One thing I posted on Twitter earlier, Greg, and I don't know if you saw it, I really kind of like the idea of putting Hedl on the right wing, and I think you're going to fight back against it because I want to keep Gaudreau on the third. And that would be Mika, Kreider, and Hedl on the top line, and then you keep that line of Strom, Panarin, and Kako together. Or do you think you should move Lafreniere up to the right wing and just get it over with?
Well, first, not to gloss over it, because we've both gotten plenty of jokes off, not at Carey Price's expense, more at how the NHL views Carey Price. But best wishes, God bless.
For sure.
Whatever Carey Price needs is what Carey Price needs to do, and I think it's great that he is taking charge. There's a life outside of hockey, and I'm very happy when hockey players not only realize that but understand the importance of it off the ice. So whatever Carey Price needs to do, I know you and I are big fans and will support whatever he feels is necessary, and I hope whatever is ailing him, he finds some peace.
Yeah, we make our jokes on here, and we'll talk our crap for sure. But when it comes to something serious like this, we're never going to wish anything ill on on anybody. That's no, for sure.
But to your Heedle point, it's an interesting question. It's not a bad idea in a vacuum. And it's something we've talked about all the time. I think even before the season started, you and I had conversations of, you know, what would happen if the Rangers put Goodrow at third line center, and just when Kravtsov wouldn't come home, we said, does it make sense to just move Heedle up, even though if he's not playing center? And in a vacuum, you will just want as much talent as humanly possible in your top six. And if Filip Heedle is one of your six most talented players, yes, the Rangers should absolutely be finding opportunities to get him in the top six. But we still can't have a Filip Heedle conversation without also having a Ryan Strome conversation, because there is a decision the New York Rangers are going to have to make after this season in regards to Ryan Strome. And a variable that will go into that decision is Filip Heedle. Is he capable of being a top six center? Whether it's injuries, starting and stopping, or situations like this, where the New York Rangers just have to put a guy up in the lineup because someone else is hurt, we just seemingly always find an excuse to put off this answer. And it's always driven me a little batty. I don't want to say it. Yeah, this isn't a question we should be asking anymore. We should have more firm answers than what we have. And the fact that we not only don't have more firm answers, it doesn't feel like we've ever gotten off the initial question whatsoever. It bugs me so much. And So to answer the question you have asked me tonight, if you're telling me the top line is Kreider, Zibanejad, and Heedle, I think that's a good thing for the New York Rangers on Tuesday night. But if you're asking me if putting Heedle on the wing is good for the New York Rangers beyond Tuesday night, I don't fucking know. I really don't.
I don't know either, because I don't know what happens with Ryan Strome. I've gone from two off seasons of saying there's no way he makes this team. There's no way he stays on this team. I still think they might trade him this upcoming trade deadline. I don't think he's safe at all.
I think the boat sailed there, buddy.
You think he's staying now at this point?
Yeah, unless the Rangers lose something like 10 in a row. There's no way the Rangers aren't going to be on, at minimum, the periphery of the playoff discussion.
They're finding ways to get points right now, seemingly every single
night. You said it earlier. They're 9-3-3, 12 points in 15 games. The New York Rangers will have to go – I don't want to say they have to go historically cold, because this, if anything, this offense has shown us they can go historically cold. Igor Shesterkin has to go historically cold for the Rangers to fall out of playoff contention. And as long as he's healthy, hard to see that happening. So
I saw a lot of people give me some grief on this and just say, well, do you hate Lafreniere? Do you not want to move him up? I think they tried to do that experiment of having Lafreniere play right wing. And I don't think it went – not that it didn't go well. I just think Lafreniere didn't feel comfortable.
Just move Kreider back over. That's the – the line of Lafreniere, Zibanejad, and Kreider at no point was not producing. It was always doing everything it should do besides put the puck in the net. That was the one thing. And a lot of that has to fall on the shoulders of Mika Zibanejad. Kreider's doing his part. Lafreniere had a lot of success structurally on that line. I personally don't have it. I can't come up with a reason why that line isn't together right now. I couldn't come up with a reason why that line wasn't together when Sammy Blais was playing on it, or Barclay Goodrow, or anyone. That line, the top line, should still be Lafreniere, Zibanejad, Kreider, in my mind. It was a good line then. It'll be a good line now, especially since Zibanejad's game seems to be on the upswing, and Chris Kreider is the hottest human being on earth.
I do wonder if that was part Chris Kreider and part Lafreniere saying, hey, we're just really not that comfortable playing right wing. I don't know if Gallant has that information and that's what he's working with.
Does Chris Kreider strike you as a man that's going to say he's uncomfortable doing something?
No, never. Never. Ever, ever. But you also don't want to mess with something that's so goddamn hot right now.
Yeah, but he's been hot all year, and he started the year as a right winger. So it's not like he got moved off right wing and caught fire.
Mm-hmm.
When nobody was scoring on the New York Rangers, the only person scoring was right winger Chris Kreider.
Yes, he was scoring on the power play.
I'll push back on the notion that the only thing that got Chris Kreider hot was moving Lafreniere off that line. It's just It's not the case. It's been hot all year. Playing with, it hasn't mattered who Chris Kreider has played with or what wing he's playing on. He's done it both. He's done it well. He's been very good all year long. So I don't know what lesson we're trying to teach Alexis Lafreniere by playing him on the third line. I get having to hold players accountable and making sure that they feel like if their game's slipping to do something to correct that. But I'm at a point in time where the top line in my mind needs to be Zibanejad at center, Chris Kreider on the right. And it's either Artemi Panarin on that left wing or Alexis Lafreniere on that left wing. I don't really see another option that is acceptable in my eyes, especially now. Sammy Blay wasn't an acceptable option before. Barclay Goodrow's never an acceptable option. But with one of those options out, it definitely isn't the solution now.
Yeah, that's why I think the Hedl option is just so interesting. But the Strom point you make about what the hell do we do when Strom is gone? Or is he going? Who knows? Will the Rangers extend him? Well, that'll be a conversation you and I have a lot over the next couple months, because I think we're slowly headed towards that reality where they offer him a 5-year contract or something. I don't know.
Ryan, I honestly, with Strome, I know we're talking about other things, but I'm not going to know then, and I don't know now, because you're getting to a point where the New York Rangers don't necessarily have a lot of long-term money just lying around.
They have very little.
The argument I've shifted on now that the Eichel everything is over is that I think it's just going to be a revolving door for the New York Rangers in their middle six. One person between Hedl and Strom is here for the long haul. I don't know which one at this point in time. And that other spot is just going to be dudes on 1-year deals or rentals every year.
Let's get to 5-star questions before we get to our guest, Katie Bakes, today. This one's first one's from Jay Hardesty 72. I know neither of you guys are big Olympic hockey fans. It's beginning to seem like a reality that Kreider will be a lock for the team. I mean, a power play with Kreider, Matthews, and Fox would be deadly. I mean, I would imagine Chris Kreider would make this American team. I can't imagine a situation where he doesn't. It's probably the fourth liner.
I can imagine
liner.
A couple situations where he doesn't. It's dumb. Like you want me to sit here and say I expect U.S. hockey to make the right decision?
You're right.
They had 3 locked spots they could make for this team. They chose a defenseman, and it wasn't Adam Fox.
Their GM.
You want me to sit here and
away.
Tell you I feel confident Fine. That Chris Kreider is going to be on the Olympic team?
Yes. You're right. Come on. I can't say anything. You're right.
Yeah.
This one's from Will Heat 12. What's up, Will? If Tony DeAngelo does not fight Georgiev last year, does Adam Fox win the Norris?
I mean, it is an interesting ripple effect,
it's
right?
It's such an interesting butterfly effect question.
At the same time, it's not really, because Fox was already playing PP1 over DeAngelo.
It started happening before they took him away.
Yeah,
it started happening right away. They were like, hey, this Fox guy's pretty good, huh?
So remember when there was this portion of Ranger Twitter that said he couldn't run the power play?
By God. Sorry, he's just the best defenseman in the NHL, and he's yours for the next 7 years. Congrats.
I'll say the same thing I said to the fucking idiot in our section who tried to get multiple fuck Joe Biden chants started. Some people are just fucking stupid.
Yeah.
Like that's my point. You're at a Ranger game. If you harbor those beliefs, whatever. I do care, but this isn't the time or the place. But you left your house. You paid hundreds of dollars to go to a hockey game involving the New York Rangers and the New Jersey Devils. At no point is Joe Biden in the building. There's no politics going on in front of you. You're literally watching, if we're being honest, a bunch of conservative white men play a sport. And you're choosing this as the option to be like, you know what? I need to make a stand. Just what goes through your mind?
I don't know. It's a sports game. I'm here for sports.
Relate.
Stick. You know what? Did you say that you didn't say the line? Did you? You should have said the line.
Oh, I did not say stick to sports. I told Jeff. I wonder why people leave their house.
You should. You gotta say stick to sports. That's the line. That's what you have to say. No, hey, stick to sports.
It's just so exhausting. It's a level of stupid that I, a dummy, can't achieve. And I maybe a little jealous. I don't know. There's something going on.
Me too. What is this is from Nick I. What is the new? What happens first? Eichel gets traded or? Where this will be a new segment, we'll have to figure it out. I don't have an answer right now. It's because the Mets are going to have a GM and Eichel is on Vegas. So there you go.
I had one. What was it? I saw this question in the Discord and I thought about it and I had it. Ben Simmons is still hanging around.
Yeah, the Ben Simmons.
Well,
thing
actually, this one's easy, Ryan, because I made this joke again last night. You know, Lieber Hayek is still a New York Ranger.
He's conditioning, okay?
Yep, still on the roster. They still put his. They put his face on the big board when they're introducing all the players still.
He's conditioning. He needs to condition. That's it. He's getting a little shampoo down in the AHL.
What happens first? Anything to Lieber Hayek or whatever we want to compare this to?
I like this. All right, I'm gonna think of an answer. We'll come back next week.
What happens first? Lieber Hayek gets traded, or Ben Simmons gets traded?
Hayek, definitely Hayek. I think they're conditioning him down in the AHL to kind of show him off, to try and trade him no matter what. Because
you're sure about that?
I'm not. I'm making that up, but I'm trying really hard.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. It's November 15th, Ryan. Still here.
Yeah. This is from Brock's Harlem Hockey. How would you rate the Rangers as an organization, specifically the front office administration? The top guys in the Rangers office are almost 80 years old. If the Rangers organization is out of touch with young players and their development, do players stay here in part to be part of the Rangers, or do they stay here because of being a millionaire in your 20s in New York City is amazing? I think it's both. Listen,
I'll go one step further. I think it's neither. Name me five organizations you can for sure say are better.
The Leafs?
For sure?
Well, I guess how are we quantifying better? That's the question.
My point here, Ryan, you're thinking too hard on this. Everybody in the NHL is stupid. Every single organization.
That's like
every
our thesis
team.
Of our podcast.
Yeah. So while I think me personally, in a vacuum, the New York Rangers, if I'm just grading the Rangers, me, independent of everything else, the grade's probably a little harsh. If I take into account that I have to grade this entire league on a curve, I mean, there's still no worse than probably a B, because the entire league sucks.
Well, it's not just that. Do players want to stay here because part of the Rangers? You have no idea how well the Rangers treat their players comparatively to some other organizations.
Well, yeah, I mean,
Rangers are top class if you're a player. You get everything you want and more, where that's just not the case in Sunrise, Florida. So,
yeah, and I'll also, this isn't like other sports where there's clearly more money in some cities. Every team has the same amount of money. I understand there's some tax issues going on in Tampa Bay. There's a lot going on in Tampa Bay that makes someone ask questions that deserve to be asked. But if you're Dylan Larkin, the money you could get in Detroit as a free agent is no different than the money you can get in New York as a free agent. So you're just going to go to which team you think will win more games. And the New York Rangers are one of the few organizations, especially now that the rebuild is over, that makes it abundantly clear they put a priority on winning games. So it's, I don't know, it's the NHL. The Rangers are the Rangers. The Bruins are the Bruins. Like, some of these teams are just, they are what they are, and they'll never be a worse grade because it's more common on how bad other teams are than it is how good the New York Rangers are.
This is from Ice Witch of the Frozen North. We talk a lot about regressing to the mean as the team itself in 5v5. Do you worry that Igor could regress to the mean before the rest of the team improves? I think we just have to have faith that this is who Igor is. He's kind of always been this player. He's always been this person, even in the KHL, and we have to just hope that he can maintain this level of play, because I don't expect him to regress. Even if he does regress down a play, because he's playing out of his mind right now, I don't expect it to be too much. I don't expect him to really fall off. I think you're probably with me on that, Greg.
Yeah, it's going to be hard for me to say these words, and it's a lot of stuff I'm putting on Igor Shesterkin, but like, when Jacob deGrom regresses, he doesn't become a league average pitcher. Instead of striking out 15 every night, he strikes out 8, and instead of giving up negative 2 runs, he gives up 1. Like, I don't expect Igor to post shutouts every night, but I think a average Igor Shesterkin is still better than 70% of other goalies in the NHL.
Upstate Vin, do you think the Rangers will name Fox the captain before the end of the season? No.
No.
I do not. I think it'll be next year.
I don't expect the Rangers to name anybody a captain ever again.
This is for Benny. What kind of party are we going to throw if Kreider somehow wins the goals record scoring this year? Probably he won't, because Connor McDavid exists.
Yeah. I'm at a point now where if Kreider doesn't score 30 goals, I need.
Yeah,
to,
I don't know what to say.
I need to launch a like.
It's either
committee.
Some. If he's healthy and he doesn't score 30 goals, I have nothing else. I got nothing.
It's just never going to happen. It's one of those things. It's you reach. We talk about players having ceilings, but if Kreider can't do it, it's a literal ceiling. Like, I can see it. It has writing on it. It's an actual structure that we can pinpoint to and be like, oh, look, we're on level 29. It doesn't go any higher. We've run out of floors.
This is from Jack Rogan 25. What do you think Blaze injury does for the Rangers? Do you see more of McKeag, or do you think we'll call it Barron? Well, McKeag went back down to the AHL today. So that's not going to happen. And seems
Don't say it's not going to happen. It's not. It means he's not playing on Tuesday. That's all it means for Tuesday.
I don't think much is going to change just yet. I think they'll shuffle the lines, especially because Heedle's coming back. So it'll probably be the same lineup, but take out Blay and put in Heedle. That's pretty much it for right now.
I agree. It's. I don't know.
I think Gauthier has been good. Like, you know, he's been a little bit impressive.
Yeah, I don't think you can take Gauthier out of the lineup. I'm also all for just putting Gauthier on the top line. He had another great game. I made this comment on Twitter, and it just becomes more apparent every day where it's like, this dude just wants to be great. And it's like we stopped the download a little too early, and we haven't figured out how to continue that download. But I don't see I hate calling players up just to have them sit. So if Morgan Barron isn't going to have a spot on a nightly basis, I don't want him here. It doesn't make any sense. Just keep playing every night in Hartford, who's having a really good year on their own and seems to be gelling both offensively and defensively. He's in a great position to mature and develop his game. But I have no reason to take Gauthier out of the lineup. I have no use for another center at this point in time that would have to play top 9 minutes. I'd rather just continue shuffling McKeg up and down if the Rangers just need a body in case someone picks up a little knock on an injury day. But like you said, McKeg being sent down is literally just telling me that Heedle is definitely playing Tuesday. That's all it's telling me. I fully expect McKeg to come back up before Thursday to serve as the extra forward.
Final question from TSE1231. A lot has been made of grit and intangibles, as well as the Rangers' streak being quote-unquote unsustainable to the eye test. Is it possible we've misinterpreted grit? Most took it as punching Wilson in the face, but instead we seem to be finding intangible ways to win games we should not.
Well, no, because the intangible way the Rangers have won a lot of their games this year is Igor Shesterkin is better than everybody.
I do think there's something to Gallant. I haven't fallen in love yet. There's something he's doing that's just different than David Quinn. Igor is better than everyone, and the Rangers have some undeniable talent between Artemi Panarin and Igor Shesterkin and Adam Fox. Like, those three can just win games on their own. But there is just something about Gallant that I do feel like he's making a difference in these close games, and I don't know exactly what it is just yet, but Igor is a big part of it, obviously. You make that point, and I can't argue it. What am I supposed to say? Igor is one of the best goalies on planet right now, but I do think the Gallant effect has taken control of this team just a little bit.
I'll say this. I think the most noticeable thing I've seen from Gerard Gallant that David Quinn frustratingly wouldn't do is Quinn, not only would he jumble the lines, but if it was a position late in the game and the second line was out there, he's just going to put the third line out there next. Whereas Gallant has a better read on what players need to be on the ice, when, and where the faceoff is coming. And I think that it's not a small thing whatsoever. It's a better understanding of X's and O's that we know David Quinn didn't have. But I'll say that while also saying the reason the Rangers are 9-3-3 is because of Igor Shesterkin. And the Rangers would be 9-3-3 with David Quinn as the head coach if Igor Shesterkin was playing this well. It's Gallant's doing plenty of things that also don't make sense. Lafreniere's ice time, the structure, who gets put on the first line with Zibanejad and Kreider. A lot of things worth asking questions about. The reason why the Rangers are playing well is because of Igor. And the thing you should be most, again, there's a possibility it doesn't happen, but the Rangers are too good to continue to be that bad at 5-on-5. It should change at some point. It seemingly has started the shift at 5 of the last 6 periods the Rangers have played. Need to see it more sustained, but things should be better offensively for this team. And if it gets better offensively for this team, I don't know if the sky's the limit, but it's a very high limit.
All right, let's get to our interview with Katie Bakes. We're going to talk about Henrik Lundqvist a lot. All right, here we go. Transition. Hey, we're back with recurring guest Katie Bakes. She's coming on to talk about our favorite topic ever, Henrik Lundqvist. Katie, how are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Doing pretty well. There's something off the rip I would like to get to. So Henrik Lundqvist, beautiful man, suit model, a legendary goalie, some other things we can't say on this pod. We can say them, but we won't. Has open heart surgery and then transitions seamlessly into media in a way that just is uncomfortably good. What has been your reaction so far to Hank just going behind the desk and just crushing it yet again?
Yeah, not just a suit. It's like a three-piece suit. I think I've spotted a few times. Yeah, I mean, it's kind of weird to say this or think this, but for someone who, you know, went to the Capitals, and I don't think anyone really begrudged him for that, but still, and then for the heart surgery to happen, and it for, you know, all those things to happen that you obviously would never wish on anyone, especially him, things really sort of worked out in a very oddly smooth manner when it came to, you know, I think everyone always thought that someday the Rangers would retire his number, and there was sort of good feelings on all sides for the most part. And, but for it to, like you said, for it to happen so seamlessly, has, you know, yeah, we're very spoiled in the New York area between this and the Manning cast. It's kind of like all of our favorites are back on TV, as if they were barely ever gone. And so it's been fun to watch. And like you said, he's done a great job already. And I was actually thinking, like, I'm really looking forward to when the games are a little bit higher stakes, and maybe even when we get to some sort of, you know, recurring series and that sort of thing, or, you know, seeing opponents again and again. Like, I can't wait to just hear his insight on some of the opponents. And it's always just fun to have that, that, you know, literal perspective.
Katie, does it, I don't know the exact way to phrase this question, so I'm just going to blurt it out and hope that makes perfect sense. Is it shocking how good the New York studio game is for just about every team? Like, you talked about us being spoiled between, like, the Manning cast, which is ESPN's production that just has a seemingly forever New York twang to it. But, like, between the Knicks and the Rangers on MSG, the Mets, shockingly, at SNY, the non-Michael Kay stuff that Yes does, this, it's like New York has somehow perfected the in-studio game. And I don't know how to take that as a sports fan.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, even I would extend that to say we're so spoiled by even the, like, the play-by-play and the color. I mean, it's even when you go back to the fact that, like, this has been ongoing for so long, like, Mike Breen and Walt Frazier used to be the radio guys, you know, for the Knicks. And it's just kind of, well, just kind of mind-boggling to, you know, you mentioned the Mets, like, there's nothing, you know, given how some Mets seasons tend to go, it's just such a blessing that you have that booth. But yeah, the studio shows are great as well. And it's part of the, honestly, it's part of the reason I'm even, like, in sports in any way, was because we've always been so blessed with such amazing broadcasters, and it just hooked me, and, you know, from radio to TV, and, you know, I Rangers radio, like, it's everything. It's just, we're very spoiled. It kind of comes into clarity when you watch or listen to out of town broadcast sometimes. And, you know, no disrespect to anyone, it's the hardest thing ever. I'd be terrible at it, but there's just such a difference sometimes. In some of the,
it's night and day. It's
product.
Really astounding. Yeah, yeah. Like, sometimes you're watching, like, yeah. I'll go, like, I'll go flip around games. I'm like, oh my God, this is what you guys have to listen to every night. I'm so sorry.
Yeah. Yeah.
I have Steve Valiquette. He has like 7 Emmys. He's lined them up. What a bragger. In this case, though, you could tell right away that Henrik Lundqvist got so into it. And I thought he'd be kind of nicer to the players, but there are sort of those periods where you can kind of see it in his eyes where the Rangers are just letting up a million shots and no one's defending. And he's just having sort of the war flashbacks that he's like, this happened to me so often in my career. I mean, he can only get better from here. Do you expect him to stay at MSG or maybe go somewhere else? Does ESPN come in and poach? Well, what is the next step? Because Henrik can do whatever he wants.
It's funny. As you were describing the look in his eyes, I was thinking to myself, you know, we've all sadly seen that look in the locker room, which is also telling of why he's so successful and sort of whether or not, you know, I'm not necessarily surprised that he has taken to it quickly, because as a player, and especially you never know with goalies, sometimes people are like, oh, you know, the goalie doesn't talk on game day, you know, they're sort of the kooky outlier. But he was just always someone that was right there after every terrible loss. Like, he'd be one of the, you know, two or three go-to people. And I think I saw that when he signed with MSG, they, you know, he had had discussions with, you know, your ESPNs and such, and I'm sure they're going to continue to want him. So, yeah. But my guess is that it seems to me, I mean, I don't see like exactly what his schedule is or anything, but it seems to me like he has a pretty good setup with MSG where, you know, he's not exactly like schlepping onto the, you know, or like even doing like late games.
No, he does 7 o'clock Tuesdays and like, that's it. Like,
yeah,
that's all he does.
So it's a great, like, you know, and maybe even if he does move to some national stuff, I would think he would maintain. I mean, he does seem like someone that is, you know, I would expect to be in the rotation for a long time, whether or not it's like his, you know, only or primary situation.
It's crazy because they bought him out.
He will just give
him. They bought him out, Katie. They were like, you know what? You're the best player. That's we can't say that with Brian Leach, but we can make a. You're very close. You're one of the greatest players ever on this team. We're just gonna buy you out. You can go to the Capitals, no problem. And they, you know, I don't know if they knew about the heart issue or not, but the guy was. You know, he had the surgery, and he was trying to play hockey like 2 months later. It's unbelievable. The Rangers lost cap space because of that.
I know. It's like I said, I mean, if you had asked me, you know, a few years ago, you know, will there be good relationships down the road between the team and him? I would have said yes, but I wouldn't have thought it would be this very instantaneous path. And, you know, it's obviously just a credit to him and everyone involved. And, you know, it makes it that much more heartbreaking that, you know, he never got that cup with the Rangers. And, but it's also, and you know what, I'm going to say it, like, I also feel, robbed of not, I'm a lover of Ovechkin, regardless of being a Rangers fan. So I was excited for him to go to the Capitals. Obviously it was a little bit of, you know, you don't want to face him too much, but I was also like, maybe this could be the place, you know, and two people I like to root for on one team. And so that was never to be either. And I'm sorry if that offends
anyone. No, listen, I like Ovechkin too. I was happy that he won his cup when it happened. I don't like other players on the Washington Capitals, naming like Tom Wilson in that case.
Right.
But yeah, go on, Greg.
Yeah, Katie, I think every time we have you on, you're essentially our Henrik Lundqvist legacy expert. Because I think the first time we had you on is essentially when Hank decided to stay a Ranger when the letter came out. The second time we had you on when they decided to buy him out. And now we're having you on when he's become one of the best in-studio analysts the New York sports media has ever seen. But I do have to ask, as his legacy expert, which is essentially what I am now giving you credit as being, is your legacy of Hank impacted at all? I know you just said you wish you saw him as a Capital, but does it keep Henrik in such a high stature that he really never did play another game with anyone but the Rangers, even though, again, heartbreaking, almost literally circumstances? But I don't think any of us would feel differently about Hank, but there's still something a little sweet to the fact that he's a Ranger and only a Ranger, essentially.
Yeah, no, I agree. I mean, I guess the only, it's almost like it could only be more pure if he had just, you know, retired and there wasn't the kind of unforeseen detour. But yeah, no, I mean, I think that certainly makes all of it like a smoother transition. And you know, if I guess the Rangers were due for like a good homecoming after, you know, usually they're just seeing people leave and go to the Columbus Blue Jackets and have their homecomings there. And so, yeah, I'm really glad it has unfolded this way, obviously, with the caveat being that we wish it hadn't unfolded this way. but, you know, honestly, it's been fun to watch him. As you mentioned, he can be not necessarily critical, but you can see the sort of the truth in his eyes. But then on the flip side of that, I forget when it was. It was probably a few weeks ago, but he was talking about Adam Fox, and it was just so cool to see. You could just see how good Adam Fox is to have Hank talking about him the way he was, and kind of remembering, you know, when they had overlapped a little bit, what he had seen. And it's fun to see that angle, and to, you know, because obviously there's only a few people that have that, you know, that view of the world. And so it, you know, just really makes the broadcast so much better.
I mean, he wished he had a person like Adam Fox in front of him.
Oh my
all those
goodness.
Years.
Yeah, there was a little bit of jealousy. Yeah.
Yeah. 22-year-old Adam Fox.
Talk about just how cool a cucumber that Adam Fox is. Yeah, you can just, like you said, there's some wartime flashbacks going on there. But yeah, it's really fun to see. I mean, like I said, I look forward to when, you know, there's a big game and we can get kind of a detailed, you know, this is how this guy shoots type stuff. Cause I love that. Like, I love that in baseball when you've got, you know, a batter talking about facing a pitcher. And so he can provide that. And
well, when him and Valaket just go side by side and are starting to break stuff down, it's like hockey heaven. It's like, oh my God.
Yeah.
These guys see everything. It's the best.
Yep.
We
got to get them doing more, like, you know, getting up and like physically moving around.
I know, we got to get them like a green screen and everything and have them like do the weather, but instead of hockey blocking shots, it would be quite a segment. I'll pitch to MSG and they'll ignore my emails as always. So now that we've gone through that, I kind of want to get your feelings on just how, like, you feel about the team in general and where we are. Obviously, you know that they have the young children and Adam Fox, Lafreniere and Kako. Lafreniere and Kako notably went off last night against the Devils. And, right now, it's kind of this transition period of from, hey, we have a lot of hope to, I think we're gritty and I think we can win, but we're not sure. So what's your feeling kind of on the transition the team is going through right now and where they're headed?
Well, like in particular regarding Lafreniere and Kako and last night's game, it was really fun to see how they were used in the shootout. Like, I appreciated the position that they were each put in. And, you know, obviously, like, it, you know, Lafreniere in particular, I loved that it was sort of a risk only. Like, he could have won the game and been the hero, but he wasn't going to lose the game there. Kako obviously, like, did well in his spot, but I just really like that after the games they had. It was just a little thing that stuck out to me. Obviously, it was, you know, then we have the elder, the now elder statesman Kreider, you know, ending the game. And it was a good two-night stretch. And, you know, kind of a lot of the people that everyone's been, you know, fretting about or hoping can snap out of things or hoping can sustain things, kind of all we saw what that looks like when they all do that at the same time, which usually is the problem. Like, no, you know, there's not that kind of coalescing of all the potential.
Right.
So, you know, that said, obviously, like, you know, if you look at the standings and look at, you know, other teams with similar records, they also have like a plus 20 goal differential or that sort of thing. Whereas the Rangers, I think, are like flat or maybe negative.
Yeah, they're minus two. So yeah.
There's little things like that. It's you know, there's, as you said, it's not like the vibes aren't as strong as the record, I feel like sometimes. But I do think this was a great little stretch of games that they are just coming off of, you know, where we saw like what things can look like when they're going relatively smoothly.
Well, Katie, your comments essentially dovetail perfectly into my next question for you, which is, if we now live in a world where you're either super negative about the team and everybody hates you, or you're blindly optimistic and everybody hates you. What has happened to sports nuance? Does it exist? Did it ever exist? Is this the result of Twitter overtaking sports radio, where we lost nuance somewhere along the way?
Yeah, it's funny. Like, I was thinking about this with the Knicks a little bit, which was that, I forget what, like, when I wrote a piece, but I had written something like early in the season, the Knicks were on some run, and I wrote a piece about how silly I feel when I get really caught up in like an early season Knicks run, you know, just kind of knowing what's probably going to happen. And it was, and I think the piece was tied to a game against the Nets. So it was also talking about the different expectations of the Nets and whatever it was. And then when the Knicks made the playoffs, people, like, there, I just started getting these tweets of people reblogging that and like being like, what do you have to say now, Katy Banks? And you know, it's just random people like kind of come, like I'm sure just Googling, I don't even know. But it was so funny to me because the piece I wrote was the most like waffling, like I wasn't even, it wasn't even a hot take in any way. It was very just sort of wishy-washy, if anything. And you know, people were like, it was this, you know, this sort of I forget what the name of the Twitter account is. It's like old takes exposed, yeah, or something like that. Yeah, it's, you know, and like that concept's kind of funny, I guess, but it just ends up being like kind of bad faith, like, you know, like cherry picking just any old thing that was relevant at the time. And so that's like a weird trend that I've noticed on Twitter, is just people searching, or I don't know if people are saving them or doing a search or whatever it is. I respect all methods of like being online and posting, like that's cool, but I do feel like it's just kind of a boring, like reactionary way to approach things, like, oh, this person once like questioned, you know, the shooting percentage of my favorite player, like, what do you have to say now? Like, okay, no one was, you know, staking, it's not personal. It's, you're just observing what's going on. I mean, not to say that it's not satisfying sometimes if someone, you know, is really banging a drum that you disagree with, and you see, you know, it ends up not happening in the way that you predicted. Like, I get it. That's part of the discourse. But I do think you're right that there's like a weird, almost antagonistic, instead of just like, I guess like maybe there's a difference between being like antagonistic and like argumentative. You know what I mean?
There's a good dunk is always a good dunk, no matter where it is, on the internet, anywhere. It's like a good dunk makes me clap. It's always gonna happen that
exactly.
way. I always, if people dunk on me, I clap. It's a great dunk. Congratulations, that's awesome. But I think what Greg is really pushing at is that you can either be like, hey, this team, like they all, like let's use the Rangers for example. They're terrible at 5v5 this year. They just are. And so we say, hey, the team, like, despite the record, is pretty bad. Well, then it says, hey, you're way too negative on this team. This team is winning. You should be enjoying the ride. And then you go the other way, like, hey, actually, this team is pretty good. You know, they keep winning despite whatever's happening. They're 9-3-3. And then everyone's like, hey, you got to be more negative. Like, you know, you're not calling them out for what's really happening. There's no in between anymore. You can't just be like, there's two, duality doesn't exist when it comes to talking sports on any, like, hardcore level of dissecting a team. You're just always a villain no matter what happens. And I don't know if that happens to everybody, but it definitely happens to Greg and I.
Well, it's also like the curse of the like mid-level team in a way, like, or you know, if the team is just really bad for a really long time, there's kind of just a communal shared community in talking about how bad things are and kind of, you know, the gallows humor type stuff. But when you have a team that does have reasons for optimism and is, you know, maybe papering over some flaws with a good record. I mean, I'll always remember, like, I think it was my first year covering hockey. Maybe 2011, 2012. I'm probably getting the year wrong, but like, I just remember the one of the things that made me understand hockey, you know, quote, advanced stats or analytics, and Corsi and what it meant and how it manifested was, I think it was the Minnesota Wild at the time were sort of the team that was doing really well, but people that were looking at the stats were like, eh, not so fast. And the fans were really mad about it. And I just remember that weird level of the fans being mad at math, kind of. And just not, it's just this weird denial. Like I don't feel the optimism. I mean, I'm optimistic about the Rangers right now, but I don't feel that, like I resonate more with the people that are always gloomy than I do with the people who are like mad at someone for not being positive enough. So that example just always sticks out to me when there's the team that, you know, looks good on paper, but maybe is, you know, shooting unsustainably high or whatever it is. And people are like, no, it's because they have a brand new offense that no one's ever tried before. And and you're sort of like, yeah, maybe not. So, I think there's that aspect to it too. But I don't know. You guys also, you know, are just engaging with like the most passionate fans so closely. So you're going to definitely have like
Colin sports
each
WFN
end of the
people.
Bell yes. curve. Exactly.
Well, I'll say this. It's the comparison between Rangers Twitter and Mets Twitter is always really funny to me specifically. Because Mets Twitter, we've all been so just beaten up and depressed forever that when a good thing happens, we go, look at this great thing. Wonder how we're going to fuck it up. And then, like, you go to the Rangers Twitter, and it's almost like some Ranger fans have just been too spoiled with things being generally good for a very long time, so that when things weren't good, they're just like, no, wait, no, it'll be fine. And now that they're winning despite, like, if you play out these first 15 games 100 times, the amount of times the Rangers take points in 12 of the 15 while playing that poorly offensively, very limited. This is the best case scenario.
Very nice of you to
Rangers
do a Simmonsism while Katie's here, but yes.
I did it. That was unintentional. Completely unintentional.
The Monte Carlo shuffle, yeah.
But like, it's hard. I don't remember it being as contentious as it is now on any sports Twitter where, like, if you try to – we're not even trying to both sides it, right? We're just saying we're happy the Rangers have gotten all these points.
Super pumped.
We're worried they won't get all these points again in the next 15 games unless things improve. And by us simply saying that, you have half the fan base saying, no, you're an idiot. Of course, these good times will continue. And the other half saying, no, you're an idiot. They're terrible.
Also, you're not
and
a real fan, Greg. You're not a real fan.
Yeah, I don't remember how we got here. All I know is I kind of hate it, ?
Well, I think I know how we got here, which translates to our next conversation, Greg. WFAN is something that was a huge part of, I think, all three of our lives for a long, long time.
Yeah.
And Steve Summers is now finally retiring after all these years. He who be and you there, of course. Greg, you wrote this earlier to Katie. Is this somehow bigger than the era when Mike left? I mean, Summers has been around forever. His nightly monologues are just... legendary, someone we've been hunting for years to get on the show. There's so much, like, sports radio has taken so many different turns over the years, and I think it's still kind of evolving in a world that still has podcasts now. But in that case, is I guess I'll just ask it again, is this a bigger error change than Mike?
Well, but before you answer, Katie, I'll add on to that. I just, in my opinion, there is no other Steve Summers in sports radio. He is completely different from everything else you hear on there. And that's, in my mind, why I think it's a bigger deal than we're letting on. But I'm very curious to hear your opinion on Summers retiring, state of sports radio, all that good stuff.
Yeah, no, totally. I mean, I was just about to say, like, what you just said, which is Mike is obviously a king and a trailblazer and all those things. And one of a kind in his, you know, but there's other kind of Mike imitators and other Mike types. Whereas Steve Summers is very idiosyncratic. It's like the difference between, you know, a smash hit and like the deep cut that the true fans all know. And it's like the secret handshake is, you know, there's plenty of people that know Mike and the Mad Dog, but you know, the people that listen to the Sweater and the Schmoozer, it's a different story.
The Icelanders, what is it already? It's just like the best.
Yeah, the mausoleum. And yeah, I mean, just like my friends that, you know, me and my cool friends that pull up the fan to each other from time to time, like, you know, those are, it's exactly the, you know, and how you be, and me hear you there, and, you know, it's just the difference between like the very random thing that can't always be explained to someone else that doesn't already like appreciate the genre. So yeah, I mean, it was, you know, it's funny that said, I don't know if you listened, Steve Summers had sort of a final show today.
I missed it. I'm going to try and catch
it
on YouTube.
And
here.
Actually, yeah, there were some great callers like Steve Levy actually had a great call in. Because he, I guess, worked when he was super, super young and new. And he talked about how great Steve was to him. And he also talked about how much he appreciated Steve's hockey you know, he talked about hockey all the time. And like you said, the Icelanders and had all these, it was actually funny. He was talking today, and I think within the span of 30 seconds, he mentioned Frederick Weiss and Eddie Jacquemin. And I was like, who else makes that back-to-back references, you know, Eddie Munster and whatever. So anyway, Steve Levy was great. And then Mike Francesa called in, and it truly was like the clash of the Titans. Mike called in and accidentally opened, or, you know, accidentally opened his comments by saying, "Welcome, Steve." And then he said, "I mean, thanks for having me." So it was so classic. Then it turned out he was in the middle of walking his dog. I mean, it was like, you know, so you did see the fact that one of those guys is, you know, there's a reason why one of those guys is, like, Chris, I said one of those guys is Steve Summers, and I say that, and like, you know, it's like you, the yin and yang. And yeah, I mean, it really does feel like that, you know, between them and Joe Beningo, it's sort of like the holy trinity of what the fans, you know, the sonic landscape of WFAN.
I don't know what's next though for WFAN. I know it's not going anywhere. Yeah. I'm just with the rise of podcasts, people like us, people that cover sports, and the amount of sports coverage you can get and interaction between Twitch and YouTube and Facebook. I just don't know what they do to kind of reinvent themselves, or even if they need to do that. I'm not sure.
Yeah, I know. I was thinking about, like, you know, the difference in the times when it comes to like the overnight shift and, like, you know, time. I don't know if you can hear my dog.
It's all good.
You know, it used to be that, like, if you're, you know, up late at night, the overnight shift, like, that's your company, you know, it's that or a good book or something like that. Maybe some, like, bad TV.
I called Tony quite a few times. He was my friend at 2 a.m. That's just how it was. Exactly. We talked about the Steelers and other garbage at 2:30 a.m. is the best.
Yeah, for sure. And now, you know, you can watch it, old highlights, or you can, like you said, you can watch Twitch, you can scroll an article, you know, maybe you have something playing in the background, but you know, that very direct connection with during the overnight shift, you know, it'll just be interesting to see how that manifests going forward. And yeah, I mean, you know, I was listening to Carton and Evan today after, you know, after Steve Summers logged off, and you know, there's still that kind of good daytime banter type stuff, but yeah, the sort of weird overnight guy who's hyper local, you know, didn't really exist, you know, for a long time. Maybe it doesn't really exist in the same way now. And so, yeah, it does feel like the end of an era, in the way that someone like Francesa, obviously, you know, a big retirement, you know, there's going to be like a Francesa coaching tree, you know what I mean?
Yes,
whereas not in the same way as Steve Summers.
Well, if there's anything I know for sure, is that WFAN will always be around, because there will always be New Yorkers who need to call someone to ask if the Mets could trade JD Davis for Shohei Ohtani and ask whether they're giving up too much. Those people will always exist, so WFAN will always be fine.
It, just like you saying that, like, I just felt like I was back in Jurors. like I live in California now, and just hearing those words is like, so, you know, and that's the other cool thing about Steve Summers, like, what a, just someone that really had the most, you know, bizarre callers and
so
indulged
weird.
Them and yeah, so weird.
Like, and his weird noises that he makes throughout the whole interview, or whenever he's talking to somebody, it's like, what is this guy doing? But he's the best in it. It always feels purposeful. Everything he does, yes, like everything. It's like, holy crap. Yeah, the fan has so many great moments. Like,
and I mean, as a writer, like, his little opening remarks, like, those are, that's like, it's like, it's as if he was sitting down and, like, creating, like, a New York Times crossword puzzle, you know, before every shift. Like, that's like wordplay and these little, you know, and, you know, sometimes they're super corny, but that's just to be able to do that so often and have his little, you know, right after the end of a game, he would have these little remarks and just like a, a totally different skill set than the performance of it, which is its own thing. And so, yeah, just, like, really, really interesting guy.
Yeah, yeah. Even if he, he's tone control. Sorry, Greg.
He would always come on after Met games, and when I was little, my dad and I would be driving home, and he would have what sounds like a Shakespearean play about the Met game that I just watched that is somehow more interesting than how I actually watched it. And I remember vividly one time he went on this rant, and I just go to my dad. I was like, wow, that just sounds really cool the way he's describing it. And my dad just looked at me and goes, yeah, if you ever read a book, you might be able to do that too. And it's just the most impactful thing I think any human being has ever said to me. And I was like, oh, you think your son's stupid. All right, nope, that's fair. I totally understand.
Oh my God. I mean, now that I'm thinking about it, like between that and, well, you know, Walt Frazier, like with his, I still remember him saying words that we were like studying in like the vocabulary unit at school. And I was like, oh, wow. Omniscient or omnipotent, like, you know.
No, the only reason I know what the word percolating means is because of Walt Clyde Frazier. That is 1,000% correct.
Yeah, wow. I mean, WFAN really, you know, teaches, it's like the companion to Sesame Street. Like, you graduate from that to beefing up all of our vocabulary.
Unbelievable. Katie, we've kept you long enough, and I appreciate you taking all the time you have with us. Anything you want to plug before we get out of here?
Oh, man. I mean, ringer.com.
Never heard of it?
Yeah, your source for all your written and audio needs.
Right.
And we're just ringer.com. That's my plug.
Great podcast network, too. There you go. I'll help you out there. We're actually done with the show,
oh,
too.
Oh, yeah. We love our pods.
Yeah, I need the rewatchables at this point in my life. I don't even see half the movies. I just need someone to talk to me about a movie I haven't seen.
That I've been loving our Yellowstone content as I've been binging that show, and yeah.
Pop culture galore. We're also out of here too. You can follow me on Twitter at Orion. You can follow Greg at Blue Shirts Break. We'll be back next week. We love you guys. Thanks, Katie. Talk to everyone soon. Bye bye.
Thank you guys.
And of course, this episode is brought to you by the people that are the good people of the Offer Sheet Club, the exclusive members of our NHL Insiders Chat on Discord. It's always fun hanging out with all you great people, all the great weird theories we have, and all the good times we have in the chat. So I do want to thank Adam Cassidy, Adam Cohen, Adam Curatolo. I think Adam actually messaged me on how to say this correctly. I think it's Curatolo, Tulo, Tutolo. Nailed it. Good. I'm getting funny looks. Alex Carter, Amber Coensberger, Austin Biedelman, Ben Waters, Ben Weber, Biggs Malone, Brian Doyle, Broadway Butcher, Bleeder, Chris Finelli, CJ Stellwagen, Dennis, I don't know why this is what he said. I call you Dennis last week, Daniel, but your name is Daniel, and I don't know why I did that. I'm getting funny looks again. No, last week, you don't understand. Look at me. Last week, I called Daniel Dennis because I read ahead on the list. Okay, she's still looking. Daniel Tayson, David Narendon, David Siegel, Dennis Deitz. There you go. Actual Dennis. Eric Stagg, George Obritsky, give Gartner a cup. Gretzky Gareth McFly. Welcome, Gretzky Gareth McFly. Very fun. Thank you so much. Harrison Hasco, Jake Berkowitz, Jerry and Marquez, JD, Jimmy Mack, John Hardesty, Christopher Florida, Christoph Berg, Kyle Franklin, Lazek Gronkowski, Lou Giordano, Lucas K, Matthew Kine, Max Nielsen, Pavel Kojarev, Randy Tesser, Steven Lohmeyer, Stigblebox, Swinegart, The Drop BK's, Tommy Sinclair, Tommy O'Neill, Tori from Manhattan, Upstate Vin, Vinny Bracco, Vinny Hay, and Will Spector. Boom! Nailed it. Got it all done. There's a lot of you now. Thank you all for becoming a part of the Blue Shirts Breakaway family and hanging out with us. I wanted to just take this moment to talk about, if you don't mind, what it meant to me when Gallant went to Capo Caco in that shootout. I don't think you understand. I know Capo Caco had a game score of, what was it, 3.79? The highest of any Ranger this year. His second highest game score ever was 0.65. But for Gallant to not only... He had other options. I don't know if you've heard of Artemi Panarin, who went after him. I mean, he never went to Adam Fox. That is very strange to me. He went to Kevin Rooney first, ? I'm not sure why that was a smooth move from Mr. Gallant, but that's what happened. But he went to Capo Caco in a moment where the Rangers could have easily lost the game if Capo doesn't score. Yes, I know that there's another chance, etc. Caco goes out there, absolutely buries it. And then he goes to Lafreniere, and not a high pressure, it's still a high pressure situation, but a situation where he can be the hero. I think Gallant, who I'm still lukewarm on, I haven't fallen in love with just yet. And I think most of us kind of feel that way. But a lot of fans seem to love him. And maybe this tough development, I don't think with Lafreniere, but more with Caco, has sort of, or maybe will allow him to take this next step. And I say that because Kako said in the post game, hey, I'm really happy that Gallant has allowed me to stay on this line, has stuck with me despite my low production. Because that was not going to be the case with David Quinn last year. And I'm a noted David Quinn defender, as you know. I think he got short end of a stick when it came to some criticisms he got. But there were plenty of criticisms to have for David Quinn in this situation. And one of them was he moved everyone up and down the line at will. And Kako never got comfortable, never got to play in the place he wanted, was moved up and down between the third, the fourth, the first, everywhere. He got played everywhere. And instead, Gallant just said, hey, we know that you're going to be good. We know you have the potential. Play with Artemi Panarin, the best left wing in the league. Ryan Strome, who can't hit an empty net to save his life, but will absolutely pass you the puck back, and has done that. So I think that showed a lot of confidence building for not only Kako, but my confidence in Gallant of he's going to give these kids chances. He's going to allow them. It's not a meritocracy. Kako did have the best game of any Ranger, and he was the first star overall. But to have him go out there at the end of the game and just do and take that shot, I was shocked at the moment and couldn't have paid off any better. Hate the shootout. Couldn't be cooler than that. One of the best, one of the game of the year, if I'm being honest. And anyway, thanks for staying and listening. And love you guys. Thanks for the support. We'll be back later this week on OT. Bye.